special evening to you. I am Gregston Seeley, the Better Health Radio Show. And on deck this evening, we've got for you Dr. Keir Lewis, and she's standing by with her guest. So let's not keep you back any further and say a special good evening to Dr. Lewis. Good evening.
Hi, good evening, Gregston. How are you?
Yes, please. I'm not too bad. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while, too long.
Yes. Yeah, things happen sometimes.
It's true. But it's really good to be here. I want to say a warm welcome to our listeners, as always. Welcome to the show, the Better Health Show, where it's a show that is aimed at raising public awareness on common health issues that affect us all. It's always my pleasure to be host with you. And as usual, we want to have a very engaging and interactive session this evening. So I want to remind you at the top of the show that you can contact us either with questions or comments by calling 434-1790. Again, that's 434-1790. Or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. That's 266-4862. Now, I want to start this evening's discussion by saying we've had a lot of conversation around NCDs, non-communicable diseases. And, you know, we've been talking about different conditions. So we've had a talk on diabetes. You know, I believe sometime back you might have had a talk on hypertension and all of these things. But there are things that contribute to these NCDs. And I can't help but notice that even though it's the very start, cropover is in the air. We are seeing, you know, if you're on IG, you're scrolling, you're seeing the band launches and the pop-up parties and the cruises. And people are getting ready to have a ball. And so I thought this evening that we should probably have a session reminding persons a little bit about alcohol use and misuse, because this is a season where people tend to like to drink lots and lots of alcohol. So this evening, we're going to be having a conversation about the effects of alcohol on the body. Now, why is this important? In 2018, the World Health Organization reported that alcohol contributed to more than 200 diseases and injury-related conditions, and they listed a bunch of them. In 2019, alcohol was the leading risk factor for attributable burden of disease among people ages 25 to 49, and the second leading risk factor among ages 10 to 24, the ninth leading risk factor among all ages. So alcohol misuse can be a significant problem. In 2019, alcohol use accounted for 2.07 million deaths of males and 374,000 deaths of females globally. So this is something that unfortunately affects males disproportionately. So we want everybody to be tuning in and calling your male relatives and say, look, we're talking about something important on Better Health this evening. So this evening, we have a special guest. As always, we try to get the best and the most qualified for you. And we are absolutely privileged to have Dr. Alert. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Alert. He is a family physician, a member of the Caribbean College of Family Physicians, and an associate lecturer in family medicine at the University of the West Indies, Cahill. Dr. Alert is also a sports medicine physician, the former president of the Barbados Sports Medicine Association, and he would have been team doctor at a number of meets. He is a former researcher at the Chronic Disease Research Center in Barbados and the founder and director of the Wellness Clinic in Bridgetown, Barbados. Well qualified to speak to us on this topic this evening. Welcome, Dr. Alert.
Thank you.
Right. So, Dr. Alert, we want to start the conversation. Everybody, we think, knows what alcohol really is. But when we are talking about alcohol, there's so many different definitions that you can think of. You know, there's the rubbing alcohol that you see in the supermarket versus the alcohol that we drink. So what are we really talking about when we tell people about alcohol use? What's this alcohol we're talking about?
Okay, well, we're not talking about the rubbing alcohol today. We're talking about the drink.
Right.
Chemically, you know, the baseline chemical is something called ethanol. Okay. But commercially, it comes in a number of different products, you know, that we consume in various amounts, whether we're talking about beers, whether you're talking about rum, whether you're talking about wine, champagne, you know, energy drinks, vodka, and so on, you know, and that is where the issue lies, certainly from a medical point of view. Now, I mean, alcohol fits into our culture quite a lot. You know, we're encouraged to drink. And in fact, just this last week, on the news, you know, the reports that the people that sell alcohol were seeing an uptick in business as the crop over season approached. So we kind of know that, you know, alcohol is going to be sold and consumed in large amounts during crop over, you know. And in generally speaking, we drink a lot. From a medical point of view, though, you know, which the show really is, there are a number of quite serious issues that are related to the overconsumption of alcohol. Now, I said overconsumption. You know, we kind of think that for most people, you can consume small amounts of alcohol quite safely. But when you exceed that limit, then you run into trouble. And unfortunately, you know, maybe about, you know, 10% of people can drink alcohol sensibly in sensible amounts and stop. But often alcohol itself encourages people to drink more and more. And that sets you up over time to develop some of the medical related problems of alcohol.
So, Dr. Allure, you really set up the picture for us well, because you talk about the fact that, yes, you can drink a little bit of alcohol, but many people overconsume, which is the case with a lot of things that aren't good for us, right?
But
my question then is, what's the safe level of drinking? I mean, like, how much should a person really be drinking?
Right. There's no absolute answer for that. You know, it depends from person to person. You know, it depends on your gender, it depends on your age and so on, you know. And perhaps we're saying that perhaps children should not drink at all. You know, there's no safe level for children. And unfortunately, we have young kids and our young school children drinking and leading to a variety of problems. For adults, roughly speaking, for males, we're talking about 2 drinks a day, and I'll define what a drink is in a minute. 2 drinks a day, not more than that. And for females, 1 drink a day, not more than that. And that's kind of the World Health Organization average recommended amount for drinking. Now, if you're an alcoholic, you're not allowed to drink at all. If you're a kid, you're not allowed to drink at all. Okay? Now,
and if you're pregnant.
And if you're pregnant, you're not allowed to drink at all.
Absolutely.
Or you should not drink at all. Right.
Right.
Now, 2 drinks a day, let me put it back another way. There's a total amount of alcohol or pure alcohol you can drink. And, you know, how you get to that depends on what you're drinking. You know, for example, 2 drinks a day is 2 beers, right? And a beer is probably about 350 mils, so it's, you know, or 2 cans of beer or two mugs of beer, right? For wine, you know, it's not the equivalent amount as in a beer. You know, a wine glass is much less, maybe 5-6 ounces. So it's 2 glasses of wine, you know. For vodka, again, it's sort of slightly in between. It depends on the strength of alcohol in the product. So beer is generally a low-strength product, while things like whiskey, vodka are high-strength products. So obviously get a lot more alcohol in them, and obviously then you should drink less at the rising of the problem at a much earlier stage.
Right, so we're talking about the difference between what we call hard liquor and, you know, the softer things, right?
Right.
And how you should, right, moderate between that. So that's really, really important. So then we started out this discussion. We said that the World Health Organization said there are approximately 200 things or 200 diseases and injury-related health conditions that alcohol contributes to. And we can't go through all 200, but there are certainly some that come to mind, Dr. Eller, in our population. So what are some of the poor health consequences of alcohol overconsumption and overuse?
Right. They're both short-term, or also called acute complications, and long-term complications. Some of the short-term complications occur if you drink too much. So you can get drunk and disorderly. And as Sparrow then put it, you can go on to become, there are 6 stages of drinking: dizzy and delightful, drunk and disorderly, danger of death. The 6 stages. but alcoholics are at high risk for accidents, you know, and at one time our accident emergency department were actually doing a study and a record of how many people came in, you know, how many motor vehicle accidents were caused by alcohol abuse, okay? Things like vomiting of blood, coughing of blood, those are things acutely. And then the more chronic things relate to...
Look, Dr. Alert, before we go on to the more chronic things, we have a caller on the lines. I'm just going to break and let the caller ask their question, and then we'll jump right back into to the long-term effects of alcohol use.
Yes.
Yes, hi, great evening. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening. We're well. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. That's wonderful. Well, you know, all of my wellness comes from you, and I really wish that wellness would be over you and continue to stay well. I want to add some wellness to the program as well. Thank you very much. God bless. Just keep being my source. Thank you so very much. All I can say is thank you for being well. So, this evening, I wanted to ask a couple of questions. This is a very interesting topic. This always excites me because as a person and a youth who doesn't consume any alcohol at all and who over the course of my life has only consumed basically only a very small amount, at one point it would have thinged me out, and then that's why I decided I would go celibate. I would not drink any more alcohol at all. So that's the reason why I stay out of it. But to those who do, I have a couple of questions, three questions. The first question quickly. Does it matter the type of alcohol? Good evening, Dr. Aller, and thank the production team for taking my call. Does it matter which type of alcohol you use that would give these inebriating effects in terms of leading to the non-communicable diseases, which is the purpose of this program this evening, in terms of in relation to the rum, the vodka, the whiskey, the gin, all these types. The second question is, Dr. Lewis, now in terms of alcohol, you will note that there are some diseases in which the only way to cure or to get to a point of treatment that you can get them to the hospital via the ambulance is for the doctor to administer more alcohol so that by the time they get the hospital, they can then be obviously from that core principle of disease of the liver. And alcohol really does affect the body and the liver and so on. So based on that, my question is, how can or what can help a person from being so addictive to it, from stopping drinking it in the first place? What are some of the things that people can do, and it's not even a high cause, it really is a depressant, to not make you feel the way you feel when you drink alcohol? What are some of the other things, running and so on, you know, the natural highs that you can get from that? And the third and final question is, now, in terms of this alcohol, alcoholism has affected people in my family and so on. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, that's why I have decided not to drink any at all. In relation to the season that's coming up or that is here, cop over, obviously on the day they're going to be drinking a lot, and you wouldn't want that to happen. And then they go and then they go back to work, they get back functioning and so on. I'm asking, based on the alcoholism in the Caribbean, what are some of the things that can be done for people who drink based on non-drinkers like me giving testimonies like these? What are some of the, can we have a coalition of people who don't drink? You're having it now in terms of the doctors talking to people who do to get them to stop. Like me. Thank you.
Corey, well, thank you so much for your questions. Dr. Alert, you had a lot. You know, I had to take some notes. So the first question was, does the type of alcohol matter?
No, it doesn't. The bigger problem is how much alcohol you drink and over what time period you drink. So if you drink enough alcohol for enough period of time, you're going to have problems, you know. So So the particular type of alcohol, whether it's beer, rum, energy drink, vodka, wine, you know, those don't matter. You know, the absolute problem is how much and how long.
Right. The second question, Dr. Alert, has to do with treatment for alcohol addiction. I wanted to stick a pin in that one because I want to deal with that a little bit later in the program. I thought it was an excellent question, but I wanted to highlight the issues surrounding alcohol use first and then go into that particular question. So we definitely are going to address that. So I encourage the listener to keep listening to the program. You will definitely get an answer to that question. And then they spoke about having persons like him who don't drink, you know, speaking to others who have a problem with drinking. Basically, we're talking about advocacy as it relates to alcoholism, the problems surrounding overuse of alcoholism. So, Dr. Eller, I wonder if you have any thoughts or comments about that.
Yeah, that's a difficult area. You know, we've found over the years that alcoholics, and it's because perhaps alcohol is legal, you know, and it's promoted socially, you know, it's a nice, good social lubricant. You know, every fed advertises they have alcohol. Every party you go, you know, for weddings they have champagne. Alcohol is promoted. So it's hard to discourage people from using alcohol. And unfortunately, you know, once people start, you know, sometimes quite a lot of people actually go on to develop chronic use and abuse of the alcohol. So that's a problem. And even people who develop medical-related problems of alcohol and enter programs like Alcoholics Anonymous and so. Sometimes it's hard to keep them sober or alcohol-free for long periods of time. So yes, we know that's what we would like to do, but in truth and in fact, we haven't particularly found any good method of doing this over sustained periods of time.
Yeah, alcoholism is very complex, and because, like you said, it's so interwoven into our social fabric, and you feel that pressure, especially men, to drink, if you know you're a real man, drink some drinks, it's very difficult for persons to abstain and pull away.
So you see especially men, but I think we're also seeing quite a few young women, you know, teenagers.
That's true.
Drinking
that's
hard
true.
And, you know.
That's absolutely true. So, Dr. Larry, we're having a conversation right before we were talking about the ill effects of alcohol on the body, and you were about to talk about the long-term effects. Can you share some of those with me?
Right. Perhaps going by organ, it can cause effects on your brain. You know, the simple things, you know, dizzy, you can't concentrate, you can't work, do your work properly, you know, and long term, it can actually cause damage to your brain. So that, you know, your mood changes, you get forgetful, you can't, your coordination gets disrupted and so on. So it causes problems in the brain. It causes some problems in the heart, you know. And it contributes in our part of the world to a variety of health problems. And, you know, heart disease and cardiovascular disease is a main NCD, and alcohol is certainly a driver in that. Alcohol affects the stomach, okay, indigestion, vomiting, vomiting blood, and even things like stomach cancer, which is a thing. Liver as well, liver issues, you know, liver cancer. Prostate cancer, you know, so there are quite a lot of things from an organ point of view that alcohol affects, you know, and there's lots more if you break it down, but those are some of the main ones that we tend to see around here that people end up in hospital with, they end up in the psychiatric hospital with, you know, and then it causes, you know, many mental things, families get disrupted, you know, people lose their jobs, people crash their cars, you know, you know, families are totally mashed up all because of alcohol.
And I love the last part, that the last point that you made, because a lot of the times as doctors or people in the medical profession, we might think a lot about the medical aspects of alcoholism, but there's a big social burden that comes with it as well. I'm sure that one of us, all of us, know at least one person who has somebody in their family or who misuses alcohol and has caused social problems. And you see the effects on their children, you know, the spouse or, you know, the significant other, the effects at work. So there is a major emotional and mental component that goes with alcohol misuse that persons must understand. Now, you mentioned the NCDs, and like I said, we've had a lot of conversations surrounding the NCDs, and I want to have a short discussion about the fact that alcohol is not only a risk factor for the development of NCDs, but then the development of the complications of NCDs for those who already have these conditions. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, Dr. Alert?
Yeah, okay. Well, as I said, it's a risk factor. You know, if you don't have an NCD and you drink heavy, you can develop some of the NCDs. If you develop the NCD and you drink heavy, you can develop the complications. And what makes it worse, if you drink heavy, you tend not to eat properly. You tend not to take medications. You tend not to take care of yourself. You know, you don't go to your doctor's visits. You don't take care of your hygiene. You tend not to exercise and so on. So all those things contribute to making your overall condition worse, you know, so that at various levels, apart from the direct effect of the alcohol itself, your whole behavior, your whole mood, your whole lifestyle changes when you become a chronic alcohol user. And that aggravates everything and makes the NCD and its problems even worse.
Right. And then I find, like, even for persons who might not have an alcohol misuse problem, but they might have high blood pressure around the season like this, they can find themselves drinking a lot, and you can see that blood pressure creeping up because we know there's a relationship between your blood pressure and alcohol use. Diabetes is another one. You know, you have a patient in your office and you're trying to figure out, well, you were so well controlled before, what happened? You know, what? Why is the A1C going up? Why are the blood sugars going up? And then when you question them, the alcohol. So I think a lot of people do not realize how much sugar is in alcoholic beverages. Some of the sugar you can find in some of these beverages.
In some of them, yes. But yeah, some also don't have sugar at all. But overall, it does upset your overall metabolism. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And then there's always this talk about alcohol being good for the heart. You know, people say, talk about red wine and things like that. What's your position on that, Dr. Alert?
Yeah, well, there's evidence that some types of alcohol, wine in particular, has among the antioxidant properties, and that's good for the heart, but then only in tiny amounts, you know. So yes, maybe a glass of wine or two a day maximum can perhaps help you if you have certain types of heart problems. If you go above this amount, you're not going to get any of the beneficial effects. You're going to get some of the bad effects. So there are good effects, you know, in terms of antioxidant properties, you know, associated with tiny amounts of alcohol, but don't overdo it.
Right. Okay. And we mentioned before, we talked about the relationship between cancer, you would have mentioned alcohol and certain types of cancers. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit more because we know that, you know, cancer is something that a lot of people fear. And I'm sure that people try to reduce their risk factors for developing cancers, and especially if there's a strong family history. So can you tell us a little bit about the link between alcohol use and cancer, maybe some of the cancers that are associated with alcohol use?
Right. Well, we don't know this exact biochemical reason why alcohol causes increased risk of some of these cancers. You know, cancer of the stomach, cancer of the liver, cancer of the prostate, and so on. We don't know the exact biochemical reason, but we do know, we have noticed the link between people that drink alcohol heavy and these cancers. And also we think that if you don't drink alcohol, then you're also more protected, or you have a less chance of developing these cancers. And furthermore, if you do have these cancers, again, as before, you tend not to follow your general other healthy habits. Healthy eating, you know, eating your fruits and vegetables, getting your regular exercise, taking your regular medication. And those are scenarios in which tend to aggravate cancers. So, you know, so that, you know, alcohol use certainly doesn't go along with cancers at all, whether we're talking about prevention, whether we're talking about treatment.
And just to let our listeners know, some of the cancers that alcohol use is associated with, you have the cancers of the mouth and the throat, cancers of the voice box, or what we call the larynx, cancer of the esophagus, that's the tube that your food goes down to get into the stomach, certainly cancer of the colon and the rectum, and that's an important one because we are seeing an increase in colon cancers. So anything that reduces the risk for colon cancer is something worth considering. Cancer of the liver, and I want to speak more specifically about the effects of alcohol on the liver, Dr. Alert, after this. But one of the things that I want to highlight for women, because Dr. Alert, you noted that there is an increase in drinking among women, or I said anecdotally, I would say anecdotally because I don't know what statistics we have, but certainly cancer of the breast in women is linked to increased alcohol use. You know, so this is something that we want young ladies to be mindful of in a culture where partying is linked to lots of drinking and you're seen as the fun party girl, the more shots you can take, but you're actually increasing your risk of developing breast cancer.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So a lot of persons we talk about alcohol, we talk about the effect on the liver. That's the most known consequence of alcohol. Everybody talks about drinking out your liver. Right? Tell us a little bit about alcoholic liver disease. What does that look like?
Okay, well, there are a few things. Hepatitis actually means an infection of the liver, and they can get an alcoholic hepatitis. So alcohol affects the liver to the point where we develop problems like vomiting blood or hematemesis, coughing up blood, you know. Your liver is an important organ in the body overall in metabolism. So then you can't digest properly when the liver is affected. You get weak, you're mashed up, you know, you're susceptible to any other sort of infection because of the important roles of the liver. And in the worst case scenario, you can go on to actually develop liver cancer, which is not one of the cancers that we can particularly treat very easily or we have a good success rate in dealing with. So there are multiple problems that can occur with heavy alcohol use that affect the liver. And unfortunately, if you reach that category, if you reach in that boat, there's not too much medically we can do for you.
Right, right. So that's where we don't want to be. We want to, prevention, like we say, is better than cure, because at some point in time, there's no cure, yeah? You've gone over, right? So then the other thing that I would want to talk about, we talked about cancer and the liver. You mentioned at the top of the program about alcohol and different ages, right? And I think that's an important discussion to have. We said that underage drinking is something that we discourage. But certainly alcohol affects young people differently. It affects their development. Certainly it would affect people in middle age differently. And then older persons might be affected, you know, based on our metabolism, our body makeup, everything surrounding that. So can you tell us a little bit about how alcohol affects persons of different ages? Kind of give us a rationale for why we say, for example, we discourage drinking among children.
Right, yeah. Well, one of the problems we have in Caribbean societies is that we often encourage very young kids to have a sip of granny's drink or grandpa's drink. You know, so our young children are exposed to alcohol at a very early age, you know, and one of the significant effects that alcohol can have, among the others, is that it affects development of the brain. So in fact, you can impair or you can constrict or restrict a child's mental development from a very early age, you know, by giving them alcohol or introducing them to alcohol, you know, and unfortunately, the early introduction of alcohol often can lead to them deciding to take it up for themselves and abusing it at an early age. And then, you know, you read irreversible brain damage. They're never, ever going to, they'll never make catch up the lost development they have when this occurs. Okay. So that's the problem, or that's one of the problems with alcohol and very young children. Alcohol in teenagers and girls especially, I guess it can affect their reproductive activity, or maybe not social activity, but capabilities, you know, right? Even though maybe when they drink alcohol, they may be more prone to attempt to reproduce, unfortunately.
Which creates other problems.
Yeah, right. So that's it. And then the teenage boys, you know, alcohol often sets them up to rough and tough type of behavior. They're a bad guy, and you know, they're mean, and they join gangs, and they, you know, and they're prone to violent behavior, you know, in part mm-hmm. because their brain is gone, and in part because they join gangs of other people who drink hard like them, you know. So it leads to unacceptable social behavior and social constructs. Okay. And that's in teenage boys we're seeing, and then perhaps maybe slightly less in teenage girls now. And then when you reach adults, you know, when they drink, again, as we all said before, a variety of medical and psychological issues that affect you for the rest of your life. You know, it can affect your ability to work, can affect your family relationships, can affect your physical health, can affect your mental health. You know, so, you know, problems, you know, basically throughout life. And that's what we do see.
And what about in older persons? So, you know, you have somebody who has a midlife crisis and new lease on life and decides they, you know, they're going to start partying and drinking hard. Or honestly, what can occur is people go through very difficult times. It could be the loss of a relative, the loss of a home, and they turn to alcohol at an older age. How does alcohol impact the body as you get older? Is there any difference?
Yeah. Well, yeah. They often use alcohol as a crutch. As you're going to say, you know, because they feel socially deprived, and you know, the alcohol is sort of their support, you know, and mm-hmm. this often leads to more and more alcohol use for continued support. Yeah, alcohol does aggravate the NCDs, and the older people, generally speaking, are those at higher risk for the NCDs. So it makes control of the NCDs, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the high cholesterol, harder to manage, you know. And then, you know, if you're drinking alcohol, yeah, worried to take a tablet. So that makes things even worse. They don't eat well, mm-hmm. they don't exercise. So which are important constructs or part of the treatment. And yes, I see we have a call.
Oh, we don't have a call. I was just checking it. We don't have a call. Okay. So, well, with that, I want to remind our listeners, you know, that we are happy to hear from you, your questions and your comments surrounding this issue. You can reach out to us at 434-1790. That's 434-1790. Or send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. 266-4862. This evening, we are discussing the effects of the overuse of alcohol on the body. We've talked about the effects as it relates to NCDs and cancers and a number of other things. So we're continuing this discussion. Now, we talked about how it affects persons of different ages, but is there a difference between how alcohol affects men versus women?
That's a difficult question. I'm not sure I know an absolute answer to that. I do know that, you know, we have in our population right now more and more women abusing alcohol and coming down with the problems. Whether the effects, the psychological effects are different in men and women, I haven't seen any hard evidence one way or the other. But bear in mind, this is not my area of expertise, I quickly point to add. But I don't know the answer to that. Perhaps a psychiatrist may give you a better answer. But, you know, generally speaking, it affects all genders in our society.
Mm-hmm. And then when we talk about alcohol dependence versus alcohol addiction, right, you know, these are medical terms that we throw around.
Yeah.
But is there really a difference between alcohol dependence and alcohol addiction? And I guess a good follow-up would be, what are some of the signs of alcohol addiction? If you're looking at a relative or even looking at yourself and saying, man, I can handle my drinks. But what are some signs that to alert that you might have a problem with alcohol dependence or addiction?
Signs that you have a problem include things like, when you wake up on mornings, you must have a drink, you know? Mm-hmm. You must have a drink to start off the day right kind of thing, or to warm up the blood, you know? You can't live without a drink, you know. You spend more and more money on drinks, okay? You spend more and more time drinking, whether it's with friends or alone, you know. But, you know, drink becomes your main partner, you know. And then, well, there are health issues. But often the person themselves individually don't recognize the health issues. You know, their poor concentration, their slurred speech, their, you know, can't do their work properly and so on. Maybe car accidents, you know, those are cues, but those are cues that, you know, somebody outside would recognize, even though the person who is the heavy user often doesn't necessarily recognize them. But the primary one is they must have a drink, you know, to start off the day kind of thing. You know, when you reach that point, you're already in a bad way.
Is there anything else that persons might recognize in terms of signs of addiction?
Well, like I say, you need people around them to recognize it. It's normally the person who is the alcoholic doesn't recognize it, you know. You ask somebody, are you an alcoholic? And they say, no, no. You know, they don't recognize it. But the family members, the community members, the church members recognize that the person is not concentrating, is not doing the things they usually used to do, is perhaps losing weight because they don't eat, is driving erratically, you know, is going to work erratically, you know, those kinds of things. But other people normally have to recognize it. The alcoholic doesn't recognize it themselves.
Right.
And nor does the alcoholic seek medical attention at this point as well. Alcoholics often only seek medical attention when they hit rock bottom, you know, when they crash the car or they lose their job or they vomit blood or, you know, that kind of thing when they're in a bad way.
Right. So we have a caller. So we're going to allow the caller to ask their question or make their comment. Good evening, caller. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening, ladies and so on, gentlemen, the doctor. I was just saying that I was listening to your program. It's very interesting and informative. And I just wanted to say that I agree that alcohol is something that we should avoid using, whether it's young or old. And some time ago, I attended a meeting, a lecture, with a doctor, and he had two samples of brains, right? A sample of a brain of someone who drank a lot of alcohol, and a sample of a person who did not drink, and the brain of the person who drank looked like cork, right? Looked hard, right? But the other sample, but the other sample of the person who did not drink, it showed all the veins, showed the brain. And so on, right? So, and I also understand that, you know, the alcohol affects cells, the brain cells, destroy your brain cells, as well as it affects the liver, and I believe also the kidneys. So I am agreeing with you that alcohol is dangerous for any individual at any age.
Yes, very excellent points, caller, and then you talk about any individual at any stage, and I want to reiterate, especially for our children, because, you know, sometimes we think that we're making a man or a woman okay with this person, or we think it's just a drink to help them to get to sleep so we can go about and do the things that we have to do, but we really don't realize how we are setting them up for problems later down the line. And I like to ask parents when we talk about health issues, are you setting up your child for success, or are you setting them up for failure? And one of the ways that, you know, we can end up setting them up for failure is to introduce them to alcohol at too young an age, to introduce them to alcohol at all. So it really does create a problem. Now, Dr. Alert, we're talking about signs that you're drinking too much or signs that you might have problems with alcohol. One of the things, too, I find is sitting, having a conversation with patients, one of the things I ask them is, how often do you drink alone? There are people who drink socially, and yes, you can be an alcoholic and drink socially, but oftentimes people who, as the problem worsens, you will find that people start to drink alone. So at home, like you said, as soon as they wake up, they have to have that drink. One of the other things is that they tend to be secretive about their drinking. So they tend to underestimate, or, you know, you ask them, how much do you drink? Or somebody asks, you have something to drink, thing, but and they're very, very secretive about it. They want to, you know, give you an average, you know, about 2 beers. But when you really delve in, no, you hear about the whiskey and the rum and the you know, all these different things that they're consuming. So that's secretive. If you have a relative that you find they're hiding about their drinking, that is a red flag. Drinking heavily alone at home, that is a red flag. Like we said, when they're unable to cut down. So you say, well, you know, I think you're drinking a bit too much. And they might recognize they're drinking too much, but somehow they're not able to cut down when it starts to affect your home life and your work life. You know, you're having hangovers and you can't function. That's another big red flag of alcohol abuse. So I think it's really important that, you know, we look out for these things, not only in ourselves, because we have to be honest with ourselves. Dr. Alert, you made a really good point when you said a lot of people do not pick it up in themselves. They don't recognize. But also in detecting it in persons that are around us, the persons that we love. So I just wanted to slip that point in there. Now, people may ask, where does this alcoholism problem come from? What are there things that make a person more at risk of developing a dependency or an addiction to alcohol?
Yeah, that question kind of asks whether alcoholism runs in families. Mm-hmm. And the answer is probably no. We know that there are multiple genes that affect alcoholism, but we probably also think that the environment probably has a bigger factor. So, you know, so giving the young child a drink early in life is a problem. You know, giving the children or turning a blind eye when the kids go to parties and they drink hard or they buy energy drinks. Those are bigger issues. So you can have an alcoholism running in your family and, you know, your parents have it, but you don't have to be alcoholic. On the other hand, mm-hmm. you can have parents that are not alcoholic and you are. So even though there are alcohol genes, okay, the environment seems to have play a much bigger role in the development of alcohol. You know, and in the environment, it obviously depends on who's around you, your family, your friends, and so on, and you know what sort of lifestyle you have. And perhaps in importantly, if your parents turn a blind eye to your alcohol use, okay. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, alcohol is considered a legal drug, as compared to say marijuana, cocaine, which are illegal. But they're all very, very dangerous in terms of brain development, in terms of overall development. You know, so the fact that it's legal doesn't mean it's not lethal, it's not deadly. And hence, you know, we need to be extremely careful in terms of the use of alcohol and its promotion.
Yeah, you talk about the environment that a person grows up in at night. I agree with you 100%. That is so powerful. Not only that, but the school environment and who they surround their friends with. I wonder, I know we talked about advocacy earlier, but I wonder, do you think that there is more room for education as it relates to alcoholism among young people? And then the connection between alcohol use and NCDs, because we're talking about how NCDs contributes to over 80% of deaths in Barbados. And I wonder, Dr. Alert, do you think that there is more room for health promotion and health education surrounding this topic?
Yeah, well, there's always more room for health education and health promotion and disease prevention. There always is. Unfortunately, you know, I've been saying this myself over the last 20 years or so, and saying it, but it's not actually happening. You know, and perhaps we need to have a bigger input from our Ministry of Health or the government information system in terms of having health programs, you know, aimed at various sections of the community. You know, perhaps we need to make use of the social media to get messages out about all health messages and alcohol and smoking and marijuana and the NCDs are a few of many, many areas that we need to have this done. So, yes, we're quite happy that we have this program once a week on a Sunday night. So thank you very much, Gregson, and thanks to VOB. But, you know, in truth and in fact, we need to have, you know, lots more of these kind of things happening all the time.
Agree. And maybe having some social media push around crop over with health messages surrounding alcohol and drug use and so forth would be helpful for our young people because that's what they're consuming.
Yeah, and Crapova is particularly useful because almost every year there are 10, maybe 15, 20 calypsos that promote alcohol. You know, they come and say who's a professional drinker, and you know,
it's true.
Rum sweet rum when you call a bunk to come, and you know, if anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. You know, those kind of things.
Yes, we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome to the show. Welcome to Better Health.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you so very much indeed. Really appreciate it. I promise to be quick, so I'm just going to say this. The question is to Dr. Alert. Now, I'm asking, is alcohol the cause of all disease based on the fact of how when it interacts with each and every cell in the body in terms of the lasting effects that it has doing the detoxification or the obviously the restoration of the body after it has left or after you even finish drinking for life. But we know that it causes problems and it has very deleterious effects on the body even when that is done permanently and can lead to obviously an early death. That's what alcoholism is. So I'm just asking based on that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for your question. No, alcohol is not the cause of all disease, but it's the cause of many disease, and it's the cause of many diseases around here. A lot of our diseases in this part of the world occur from things that people put in their mouths, whether it's the cigarettes, whether it's the eating habits, or whether it's the drinking habits. And in drinking habits, specifically, we're talking about alcohol and alcohol-related products. You know, and perhaps sometimes even these sugar sweetened beverages, not drinking enough water, and so on. So alcohol can cause many, many problems. You know, alcohol is promoted culturally, but that is not necessarily a good thing. But it's not the cause of all problems. And we suggest everybody to drink responsibly. You know, you know, the WHO recommendation for adults: 2 drinks a day and no more for a man, 1 drink per day and no more for female. You know, a drink is like, you know, a beer, you know, which is about, you know, what, 12 ounces, I think. A glass of wine is about 5 ounces. A glass of whiskey or vodka, which is about 4 or 5 ounces, and so on. You know, there's specific quantities, but do not exceed those. And if you have an alcohol-related problem, stop. You know, you can't sort of have an alcoholic problem. I'll only drink a little bit and nothing will happen. If you have an alcohol-related problem, any amount of alcohol can actually push you into an alcohol crisis, which sometimes, unfortunately, can even be fatal. So if you have an alcohol problem, thou shalt not drink. You know, if you don't have an alcohol problem and an adult, drink responsibly.
Right. And I want to say some guidelines actually say that if you have never drank, don't start. There are some guidelines that actually say if, you know, you don't have to feel under pressure. People talk about health benefits and all of that. But if you've never had an alcoholic beverage, there's no pressure to start. You know, the good effects that you might think you can get from Red Bull, you can get from a lot of other things. So if you haven't started, there's no pressure as a young person, as an older person to start. Yeah?
Yeah, that, so really, that makes
really
sense.
Good point. Yeah,
yeah, that makes really sense. Except that alcohol in West Indian culture kind of fits in, you know, as something to help you socialize and to line with friends and have a good time. And, you know, that's kind of hard to counteract for many people.
Yeah. But, you know, we have the example, we do have young people who do not drink, especially in religious circles, even when they do go out, they don't drink. And you do have persons who would have had, like you said, misuse disorders and don't drink when they go out, even though the social pressure is there. And so you always want to encourage people, even though the social pressure is there and it's hard, I agree with you, Dr. Uller, it's really hard. It is something that you can do. It is something that you can do. You can go out, you can have a good time, you know, without the need to rely on alcohol. I think that's a very important part. Young people need to know, you know, they don't have to drink.
All right, we to Dr. the Lewis, before you,
we have a caller?
We have a query.
Sure.
Somebody's asking me here to ask you. They say, good evening. Good evening, Gregson. Ask Dr. Alert if the doctors don't give patients medication that contain alcohol.
No, the doctors don't give patients medication that contain alcohol? Full stop.
Simple answer. Simple answer. Good, good, good. Now, we like to be very solution-oriented because we can talk about the problem from now to next year, but we want persons to go away not only being able to recognize the problem or avoid the problem, but if there is a problem, if you do have a problem, how can you get help for yourself or for a relative? So I want to talk a little bit about the treatment of alcohol dependency or alcohol addiction, medically or otherwise. Start to alert. Talk us through that. What does that look like? How can we begin to address the problem of alcoholism medically?
Okay. Good. Very good question. The first thing is you need to get the person to recognize that they have an alcohol-related problem. And unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, many people only realize that when they hit rock bottom. You know, when the family walk out on them, they get divorced, they lost their job, they crash the car, they end up in a hospital with a severe illness. Yeah, so they often, that's when they realize that, yes, I do have an alcohol problem. So you need to get the person to that point initially for them to recognize they have a problem. Because most times people feel, I could take one or two drinks, I could hold my drinks and nothing would happen. Mm-hmm. So you need to have the person recognize that they have a problem. Then they need to get in some sort of, well, depending on the level of drinking, they may need to get in some sort of acute detoxification program. You know, normally that's done in hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes in QEA, sometimes done at Black Rock Psychiatric Institution. So you need to try and get them off the acute effects of alcohol, settle them down, give them nutritional support, give them vitamins, give them fluids, you know, and so on, to try and get them past the acute phase. And then more long-term, you need to get them in a program such as Alcoholic Anonymous, which is a more long-term program with people who have gone through this type of issue, and we train counselors for you to sit down and discuss your day-to-day problems and how best to deal with it, because, you know, you are going to have scenarios in which you're tempted to get back to alcohol. You know, and people are going to have relapses, and you need to deal with those. But you need a long-term solution. You know, alcoholism, from this point of view, is a chronic illness, and it needs a chronic treatment. You know, you're not going to stop drinking today and, I good man, I better, I have no problems. You know, it needs long-term input, and often this input has to be psychological, sometimes medical as well.
Right. And, you know, there may be somebody listening to this program and saying, yeah, but I know I got a problem. I stumble home from the shop and gamble all the money when I was drunk. Somebody carry away the money. And, you know, I know I have a problem. About to lose my job, about to lose my partner. And I really want to stop this alcohol thing. But there's no way that I'm going down to the QEH. I want you to talk to us a little bit about quitting cold turkey. Some of the dangers, though, of alcohol withdrawal. What that might look like, some of the dangers in terms of a person's health. Because yes, we want to encourage persons to quit, but depending on how serious your situation is, there are dangers in trying to just do it cold turkey on your own. Can you talk to us a little bit about alcohol withdrawal?
Yeah, or acute alcohol withdrawal, people who drink heavy. You know, we don't recommend that people attempt to do this on their own. You need to do this under some sort of medical support. They said probably either at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital or even the Black Rock Psychiatric Institution. Doing cold turkey has many severe medical problems associated with it acutely. And in fact, you know, as the first questioner said, if you have somebody that sort of develops these problems, it's sometimes better look for the short term, better give them alcohol, let them settle down a little bit, until you can get them into a situation where you can monitor them over time and gradually completely withdraw all the alcohol from the system. So treatment of DTs, you know, deuterium tremens, which is what he was describing, often in the very short term, you need to sort of slowly withdraw alcohol and not just stop it cold turkey. Otherwise, you're going to end up with other major significant medical problems. So it needs to be done under medical supervision, on normally on an inpatient basis. And then that's followed up with an outpatient treatment program, such as those offered by the Alcoholic Anonymous group.
So I hope people listen. We're not going to get fed up with the man or the young person and say, look, I'm locking you in the room and I can push some food under the open the door and push in some food and no alcohol for you. Right? We treating this problem because I listened to Dr. Alert or Dr. Lewis and we don't want this to get any worse, but we want people to understand that if a person has a severe problem with alcohol addiction, they need medical treatment. They need medical help. This is not a medical problem. And so they need that medical support. And in fact, doing it any other way can be life-threatening, right? So we really want people to understand that. Now, we talked about persons who have severe issues with alcohol use. But you know, Dr. Alert, there are going to be people who are listening to us who don't necessarily have a problem with addiction or dependency. But they recognize, you know, when I go to a party or when I'm out with the boys, like, I don't necessarily need to drink alcohol. And this is not doing anything for me. You know, it's just something that I've been doing because the crowd is doing it. Or they're looking into the season, they say, you know, around Kropova, I really feel that pressure to drink. And I would really like some tips on how I can begin to cut back on that, you know, cut back on my drinking. What would you advise a person like that, that wants to reduce their drinking?
Right. Well, the first is you need to recognize that they have a problem, as I mentioned before. Okay. And then you substitute the alcohol drinking with the other healthy lifestyle things. Eating well, sleeping well, getting regular exercise, don't smoke either. Don't drink. And perhaps some people say vitamin support is important. And if you have any other medical problems, consult your doctor to deal with it. But it's a healthy lifestyle in terms of, you know, you doing the right things. And perhaps I should also add on to that. For some people, obviously, making peace with their religious master or savior is important as well. Because psychological peace of mind is an important part of any disease treatment. And so the alcoholism is no different in that regard. But it's the healthy lifestyle. Eat well, drink well, sleep well, you know, work hard, pray hard, you know, and God bless you.
Yeah, divine spiritual help. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. We like to leave that out of the conversation, but that's really important. So the other thing, I like the point that you made about a lifestyle change. And if you're looking at your body holistically as your temple and you want to do better, if you're focusing on not only cutting down the alcohol, but you start to focus, I need to work out more. You realize, well, if I work out and I'm drinking all of these empty calories with alcohol, it's not making any sense. So that is an additional impetus to cut down on the alcohol. You know, if you're eating right, you book the place, eating broccoli and carrots and all these things and cutting out the ice cream and the cheesecake and the other things that are delicious in preparation for the Kropova body, or just because overall you want to, you know, be healthy, then you realize, well, you know, taking in these empty calories to prove a point to people through alcohol isn't making any sense. So I like that approach of looking at it holistically as a healthy lifestyle. But there's one thing that I would probably add on, and that is watching your company. You know, if you're really serious about cutting back on alcohol, maybe consider not laying with the boys after work, you know, as often as you did before, right? And I'm not saying
or change your lineman partners.
Or change your lineman partners. Find some support. Some people who say, man, look, we ain't got people who ain't gonna gas you up and tell you, God, drink, you know? It's very hard when those around you make you feel small if you're not drinking or say, what's wrong with you? Some of them will nudge you and say, you turn Christian, you go to church. You know, they make a lot of sport at people. I see Gregson laughing because Gregson knows. People who try to do things differently, right? So maybe look at the people around you and ask yourself, do I need to find some people to surround myself that can support my life decisions? I think that's really, really important. So to alert, we've had a really good conversation. I think we didn't get to talk about nutritional deficiencies, but we talked about so much surrounding alcohol use and misuse. And I think we've given people... Do you want to give people a couple last-minute tips for the season? We say drink responsibly. We expect people are going to drink, but what does drinking responsibly look like? What would you advise the person who's going into Kropova and say, well, like, one little drink here or there, how am I going to do that?
Well, one little drink now here there is not bad. It's, you know your limits, right? And work really hard not to pass your limits. Do the other things, the eat well, the sleep well, get the exercise and so on, okay? as the main things, you know, I mean, I can preach that, you know, you shouldn't drink at all, but that's a little extreme. And so they don't encourage others to drink, especially young people, very young people. You know, that's a critically bad habit in our population that we need to try to get away from, you know, in a major way.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. And is there any parting word that you want to leave with our listeners surrounding alcohol use and misuse? Anything that you want them to walk away with this evening?
Well, remember the 6 D's of alcoholism. Dizzy and delightful, drunk and disorderly, danger of death. So at the start, it's nice and good. But if you keep going, you'll end up danger of death. You'll end up in a bad way.
Good. Excellent. The 6 D's, I like that. So Dr. Alert, we wanted to thank you for a really good show. Lots of good information out there. I think you've made it very practical. You haven't stood as somebody, you know, who's a part for the culture to, you know, bring a stick and say, don't drink, or 2 lashes from the doctor. But you're related to people and where they are in the social context around drinking. And I think that you've provided a very balanced view while giving us hard-hitting medical facts. So thank you so much for taking your time to be with us this evening. As always, thank you to our listeners, those who would have called and messaged, and those who were just listening and taking in the information. This show would not be as successful without you. So we thank you for tuning in each and every week with us here on the Better Health Show. And to Gregson and the team, thank you so much again for having us and facilitating another great show. Until next week, I wish you all the best. I hope that you take some of the advice here and you continue to strive towards living a healthier life.
All right, Dr. Lewis and Dr. Colin Alert, thank you kindly. I just want to share with you that your colleague, Dr. Grandison, has suggested for those of you who want to do away with the alcoholic beverage to try soda water and Angostura. She tells me no one will know the difference looking on. So they wouldn't know it's not alcohol.
What do you want? Under the peer pressure.
Right, right. So if you need...
All right.
They will never know the difference. Only you will know the difference. Right. Anyhow. Thank you, Dr. Right. Grandison, for
Dr.
that.
Grandison,
and thank you, Dr. Lewis and Dr. Alert. Next weekend, God's willing, we'll be back again with another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Until then, everybody take care and have a wonderful week ahead.